And now, here's your host, Alessandra Torrisani.
Tom Payne, I am so excited to have you here. I feel like I say that for every guest, but this is a very special episode. And I even did a little video intro before this because I'm thrilled. You're a dear friend of mine. And I always have people that I have no idea who they are. And I'm like trying to like get to know them. And I'm like, oh, are they going to vibe? Are they going to think I'm funny? So I know all the things that I can know about you, and we're going to learn so much more. And we're just really excited because so many people have written into this show saying, yeah, you've had guys on the show recently, but none that have really talked about the struggles of fatherhood. And especially those who maybe are in a business like ours or who are working nonstop. So this is going to be a really fun kind of breakdown. And what's also really fun is your wife, my favorite person, Jennifer Ackerman, has been on the show before, and we have an awesome episode together. If you haven't heard that, go back and check that out. Oh my gosh, Tom, people are going to be freaking out that Jesus is on my podcast right now. Like,
very happy to be here.
Wow. Forget about it. Very happy to have you here. I want to know, first and foremost, what has this whole journey of fatherhood been for you as someone who's also been working on a set? Like, what has that been? Has it been overwhelming? Has it been exciting? Has it been job stability, which is always our favorite?
I was really fortunate, and we were lucky enough to be able to kind of plan it out. I was leading a show on Fox called Prodigal Son, and I was being paid pretty well on that show because I was the lead, and we had done 20 episodes the first season, and then we did, I think, 10 or 12 the second season.
Wow.
And the first season, we'd used a lot of that money to renovate our house.
Which looks fabulous.
Which looks amazing, but which was not a great business decision. Like, anyone would be like, you should not be spending this much money on your house because it will appreciate anyway, and like what you're doing is just kind of aesthetic. And I'm like, yeah, but we wanted to bring our house back to what it was in the 50s. We have a really nice mid-century modern house. And so we had money at that time, and we spent the money on the house, which we will get back at a point in which we sell it. So we had done that. And then the second season happened, and we had been talking about kids anyway. And if the third season had happened, we had a deposit down for a lease on the Upper East Side in New York, which was next to Central Park and a lot more quieter than where we had been in Williamsburg. And just a better place to bring up a kid. I mean, Manhattan is not the best place, I don't think, as far as like family life, because like you're going up and downstairs, you're dealing with tons of people. And now, having been through having a newborn in the first few months of newborn, the stress that comes with that doesn't need any more stress. So I'm really happy that actually we were able to have our child Harrison back in LA. But so yeah, we planned it out. We were like, okay, we're gonna try and get pregnant now, and we did. And when we came back, we drove her back across from New York to LA. And on that trip, we were actually like racing to get there before Jennifer's period kind of took her out. and then it never came, and so then we found out we were pregnant, and that carried on. At that point, there was still a possibility of season three, but then we found out that season three wasn't going to happen. And I was very lucky that I had just finished a big job and I was able to take the time off. So unlike a lot of people, we didn't have the financial stress at the beginning at that time. And I'm very grateful for that, and very happy that I was able to take the time off to support Jennifer and to support Harrison and our home life.
But was there any stress at all, like where you're like, oh my gosh, because I just know, like, forget about kids, forget about, you know, a partner that you're helping support in this home and this life that you're creating. I know for me, whenever I've been on a show and it doesn't go to a second season or it doesn't go to a third season, you're like, oh shit, now I'm starting over again. Was there any bit of that, or were you just so distracted by baby, baby, baby that you were like, oh, everything's meant to be, this is all happy-go-lucky? Because I know that, you know, even the guys get those endorphins where they get really excited and the hormones are there. It's very happy times, you know?
I had the second season of Prodigal Son was shot during COVID, and it was incredibly stressful to lead a show during COVID. And worry that if you got sick, then everyone's out of a job until you're better. And like, and it was very, very, very stressful. So that was a period of my life.
A lot of pressure.
Yeah, it was a lot of pressure. And like on the last day when I had a negative COVID test, I burst into tears because I got to the end of it. And,
wow.
And so actually I was happy to not have that pressure on me anymore. Sure. And have that stress. And so the 9 months of the pregnancy was kind of me supporting Jennifer and then, and also just kind of taking a deep breath outside of that stressful atmosphere and then, and being able to prepare for the birth of our son. And so also like, I don't know, I've definitely had periods of like, oh shit, where's the next job coming from, et cetera, but we're not very grand people. And so mm-hmm. we don't bleed money. So whenever money has come in,
what are you implying?
No, but well, no, but it just depends on, you know, I know that I know other people, not yourself.
No, I don't know. No, know. But yeah, exactly. You know, some of the best advice I've ever gotten, you know, from people of older generations in this business, they're like, save that money because you don't know when your next job is coming. Like that's just the industry that we're in. It's the unknown.
You really have to. And I've seen, I've been made a bunch of money and then been back to zero more than once. And on this occasion, I was like, that is definitely not happening. We're going to be careful with our money and make sure that we have backup in case I don't work for a while. Mm-hmm. But so it was a conscious decision to take time off for Harrison's birth, the pregnancy. And then, I mean, I was off, I started working, I guess, maybe when he was 7 months again, mm-hmm. but only on small jobs. So I have 3 movies out this year, and two of them are this big epic Horizon project with Kevin Costner, which is a very ensemble piece. Mm. So I wasn't required to be there, you know, for a long period of time. We shot one of the movies, because it's shot in sections, we shot our section in a week. Mm. So I went to Utah and shot my bits for the first movie, and then that was done. Mm. So that was very manageable. And then I have a movie coming out on March 8th called Imaginary. And that was in New Orleans, and I'm not the lead of that movie. So I was able to go for a few days and come back. But we are expecting again. And I am very aware of the fact that I'm going to have to work this time.
Wow.
At some point in the next few months, we are probably going to go to Europe and I'll start another job.
What do you think was the switch of not even the fear, but the like, oh, here, now I have to prepare. Like, what do you think the difference between the first kid and the second kid is that you have that energy like change? Is there anything? I mean, without
we're into things, our savings well, now.
Yeah, right. Right.
Now it's like, yeah. Okay, I have to. Unfortunately, you know, it does all become about money at the end of the day. And I want to have that cushion, especially now, having more than one child. It's like, I'm thinking about the next 18 years. Sure, you know? Sure. So we've got to, and probably not even further than that, obviously.
Let's
so
be honest, I'm 37 and I still need help from my mom.
Yeah, right. We just have to do the best that we can to make sensible decisions and be put ourselves in the best position that we can.
Exactly. And I think what the cool thing is what I talk about with other actors, especially like the pregnant ones who have been coming on the podcast, is what's so exciting is if you're lucky enough and you can bring your family with you to somewhere on location, what an amazing opportunity for your child to not even experience like what a set is like, you know, not about that, but like what a different country is like, what different culture is like, what different food is like, what different parks are like. I think that that's one of the coolest things about our business is that you get to travel the world to places that you may never have been before. Like I remember going to Atlanta. I was there for, I think, 3 months. And I think that was the coolest because you were there at the same time. You came to my wrap party for Stepsisters, this Netflix dance film that I did. And it was so cool because I'm like, what are the odds like that we're both in Atlanta at the same time? Like that would never just happen. You know, we wouldn't be at this like cool dive bar together, like in Atlanta, you know? And it's like, wow, it's still cool. You know, that we get to experience that and go and do that. And what a cool thing for your kids. Now, do you think now that Jen is pregnant and expecting a second very soon, do you think that there's less flexibility in bringing a whole family because there is more than one child? Or are you like, no, forget, like whatever, no big deal. Let's have them all come.
We are European, Jennifer and I, and we, the first year of Harrison's life, we took him to Europe when he was 4 months, and we were there for 2 months. And I think it was one of the best things that we did. I think traveling with your kids and getting them used to different environments and different people is really beneficial. And he, I mean, it might just be who he is. We'll find out with our second child. But like, he's the most personable, open, wants to meet people kid. And we would like to think that that's to do with how we have operated around him and what we did with him when he was young. We shall see with the next one if that was true and if it's just a personality, but there we go. And so I think, yes, at the beginning of their lives, when you can do it before they're in school, I do think it's beneficial if you can make it work. And I think if I do go and do this movie in Europe, then we'll take some help, first of all, because I don't want Harrison to feel neglected. And we'll just make sure that because I'll be very preoccupied with what I'm doing. And so I want to make sure that everyone's kind of looked after. But of course, that does feature into everything. It's like you have to pay for someone to help you out. You have to pay, you know, you have to request a bigger place to stay from production and like all these, you have a bigger car, all these extra expenses that have to be kind of factored in.
That you didn't think about before.
No, that you didn't think about before. Right. And definitely like being a young actor, you're like, I'll go anywhere and do anything. And but and you will, you know, you absolutely will, because you just want to work and you're in it for the fun as much as anything else. But now it's definitely a lot more kind of, okay, I need to consider what I do and where it is. But
something that you said that I thought was really cool, that you said that you want to make sure that Harrison still feels special. Is there something that maybe some advice that you learned or something that, I don't know, that you yourself, maybe as someone who has a sibling, right? You have a brother, something that you could give to someone else, some words of encouragement or advice of what you should do to make sure that the eldest is still feeling like, not like your baby, but that feels special. Yeah. Like, are there any, like something that I learned from another guest who was on the podcast, she said that anytime someone's going to come visit the second baby, they have like a bunch of toys that are already her first son's that are at the front of the door, but they're going to have a guest bring one of those toys and be like, here, we brought this for you first to the oldest kid to make him feel like, oh, like this is like also for you, not just for the baby. You know, is there anything that you learned or words of encouragement?
I think, obviously, we're like any other parents, and we do like to buy things for our son and give him, you know, toys like every other month.
Yeah.
but I also don't want I don't want him to associate love with gifts. And I think
I love that.
I think that love, and he's very good at this actually. And I, again, like I hope it's a reflection of what we've done with him. I think, you know, hugs and I love you and kisses. And I think our generation is better at that. Not that our parents didn't try their best, but, you know, they're dealing with how they were brought up. And I'm almost 100% certain that my parents didn't spend as much time hugging me and telling me how much they love me. And, you know, they just, they had their own shit to deal with from their upbringing, and were just doing their best. And then they've given me the space to be able to have a good life for myself and bring up my son in a way which is maybe a little bit more love, like outwardly loving, you know, like I know my parents love me, but but it's nice to know that more and like, you know, it's like
it's the vocalization. It's actually hearing the I love you, or you know, I love you because of this and what you've done and who you are.
I don't remember my parents ever telling me they love me, you know.
Oh my God, Tom, that's so sad.
Well, it's not a very British thing, but
it's not British at all.
I'm a million percent.
It's a generational thing.
Absolutely. I'm 1,000,000% certain that their parents never told them that they love them. Like a 1,000,000%.
100%.
And so it's just not familiar. And like, you know, it was a big step for my dad to tell me he was proud of me when I like got into drama school kind of thing. And that made me cry because that was like the biggest thing that he'd ever said to me that was like personal and obviously came from somewhere. What I just imagine, like, what will my son be capable of if he's just like flooded with love and the most secure person and the most loved, you know, person in the world? Like, then that just sets you up in it puts you in a great position in the world. Yeah. I saw someone, I can't remember who it was, on a red carpet or an interview the other day, and someone was asking them about how you can protect your daughter in the world, and he was just saying how exactly what I just said and make them feel loved and powerful. And then you don't fall into it with the wrong people, because you don't need to be, you don't need your existence to be justified by someone else, because you already feel
it. You don't need
it.
The validation.
Exactly. That's the word I was looking for. You don't need anyone else's validation. So you're less likely to fall into any traps, emotional traps, or, you know, any kind of things that other people might be looking to take advantage of you, because you don't need other people in the same way. And I think that's a really powerful thing. Absolutely.
Oh, I love that so much. And as someone who I'm going to speak as someone who's an outsider, but also has seen Harrison since literally day one, you know, he's probably the kindest boy I've ever met. And I say boy because I've met many little boys, you know, and they're all really sweet and they all have their things, but there's something that there's this emotional soul to him that, you know, I know it's you and Jen. I know it's also just who he is. Like, he was born that way. And he's such a kind, beautiful soul. And I feel like he is just going to do so much. And he's going to be such a great big brother because he just loves all of his friends. Mm-hmm. Like, he loves ladies so much in a way that he's so kind to her. I've never seen any behavior where I'm like, ooh, you know, where I'm like watching, I'm like, oh no, no, no. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got her. Like, I'm like, okay, she's going to be taken care of for the rest of her life. Harrison. She just stands by his side. Like, she'll be fine. You know, she's like the wild child. We all know, you know, but it's a testament to you and Jen. It's a testament to just who he is. And I think you're right. The more we can tell our children, and not in a coddling way, I think that that can be misrepresented.
Not helicopter parenting.
Or misunderstood. Not helicopter parenting at all. It's just letting them know that you love them no matter what, unconditionally, and no matter what they do, no matter what they say, you are there for them. And there's a safety that I think is there that our generation didn't have.
Well, it's interesting though, because like my parents, so I say like, oh, they never said they love me, blah, blah, blah. But the biggest thing that they did do for me is that I always knew that they supported me, which is, so I did have that. And like, I knew that they were always standing behind me. Like, I would get in trouble in school and blah, blah, blah. And it was always for stupid stuff. And I know my parents were always like, that's so dumb. Like, the school is being stupid. And, or like, there were a few situations in my life where I'm like, oh, my parents were cool in that they just like stood up for me and supported me. And that was a huge deal. And I wouldn't be where I am without that support. And I mean, in our industry, it's like so difficult. And they both stood behind me because they knew exactly what I wanted to do with my life. And that's a huge thing. I'm forever meeting people who didn't have that support or were pushed into a career that they didn't want to do. And then they're adults now and they have families. And then they're just like, well, I got to keep doing this job because, like, we know, we were just talking about, we need to support our families. And so we need, you know, at this point in my life, I don't know what else I would do to make money for my family. Like, I'm always looking for little side gigs, but this is my main source of income. Yeah. And I'm lucky that I love my job. You know, it has its hardships, but I love it. You know?
Well, speaking of support of your parents, what was the moment for you that you knew, wow, this is the career that I want. I can't imagine doing anything else. And this is what I'm going to pursue.
So I don't tend to believe people when they're like, well, when I was five, I knew I wanted to be an actor, because you don't know that. You know that you like people applauding you and saying that you're great. Like,
I mean, I love the attention.
Yeah, you love the attention.
That's mine. Like, I loved being in front of a camera. Yeah. I love that I could get people to, the fact that I could make people laugh to me was the biggest thing in the entire world, because that's all I cared about in my life. I just wanted people to laugh. I would do anything. I would moon people nonstop because I knew that was a guaranteed way to make people laugh. That's what I would do when I was a little kid. I was just very precocious, like, and that's what I did. Yeah. So yes, I agree with you. You don't like have this moment of when I was five, I was going to be a major motion picture star. Like, no, it's not how it really happens.
And so but you fall in love with, I mean, I, you know, was doing school plays from when I was like 7 years old and I just loved it. And that's what I love doing. And in that youthful naivety, you go, oh yeah, well, this is going to be my job. This is going to be my career, because this is what I enjoy. To the endless frustration of my teachers, like, I was quite a bright kid, but pretty lazy if I didn't care. Mm. And then my dad would kick me in the ass, and like, so my report cards would go up at the beginning and then they just slowly taper off as I got more and more lazy. Yeah. And, you know, so I just kind of did the bare minimum to get through. And then at the end of my schooling, like, I knew that I was going to go to drama school. I'm like, I'm going to apply to drama school. I'm going to go to drama school. I don't need my final exams to go to drama school. So when I was in school there, you had to choose three final subjects for the last 2 years of schooling. And then, you know, those three subjects, whatever you got in those, A, B, C or whatever, that helped you get to university, whatever. So I didn't need three. I think I only need, I didn't think I needed any A levels to go to drama school. So I dropped one, and I had this big chat with my dad where they had to sign a form where I, where they said it's okay that Tom drops this, because it wrote me out of going to university or doing anything else apart from going to drama school.
And my, which is a big,
it was a big, like, I mean, this is it. Like, we're all in now. This is like all eggs in one basket. Yeah. And so for my parents, who, you know, I went to a good school, and it was just really, I mean, that was a really big moment of support from my parents.
Well, and to paint the scene, it's not like both of your parents were in the business or they were, you know, working in the arts. Like, that's not, this wasn't their world.
Well,
you know,
so my well, kind of adjacent. Well, though, my mom is a makeup artist. My mom was a makeup artist in TV and film. So we knew that side of it. And she knew a bunch of actors, but she, you know, she wasn't.
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And so she was always very supportive because she got that it was a creative thing that I wanted to do, and like, well, if he wants to do that. And both of my parents left school at 16. So they knew, you know, my mom went to train in London and my dad became a journalist. So they got it, and neither of them went to university. And so, and my dad, he, you know, he just wants stability, you know, and he just wants us to be able to look after ourselves. But he saw in me that this was it and I wasn't going to do anything else. And so we signed that form, and I only did these two exams, and I did okay in them. I think I got an A in theater studies and a C in English. And then I think so. And then I applied to drama school and got into drama school, and the whole thing began. But it all starts with that enormous self-belief that this is what I'm going to do and I'm going to be successful at it. I think if you have any doubt, that just doesn't help you at all. If you have to know, it's a vocation, you know, it's like you have to know this is what I'm going to do. And people say that over and over again, and like, I'm 41 now, and I've seen a bunch of people fall by the wayside, and it's because they had something else that they were going to do, or like they had a backup. My dad always wanted me to train as a chef or train as something else. And I'm like, no, because if I have a backup, it's really easy to fall into that backup world, and then I'll be doing that. And you know, I was always all in, you know, and I think you have to be. I think, because honestly, it's the hardest job to hear no all the time, you know.
Well, and I think, you know, for me, right, I've been doing this since I was, I always say between 9 and 11 really when I started acting, because it was a little different. I was doing like a host of a kids club show. So very similar, but my first like real on-screen acting, you know, I was around 11. And, you know, in-person auditions all the time, nonstop, rejection, rejection, rejection. And it made me, I was always a really tough cookie, I feel like, because I was an only child, and I, you know, I'm not saying I fended for myself, but like, I, you know what I mean? I felt like I was a very strong kid. But, you know, wow, when you hear rejection over and over and over, it really, it gets to you. And you're right, there are the kids now that we, not kids, but they're the adults now that were kid stars, right? And you see the examples, I don't need to name names, we all see it, where they have gone completely off the deep end. Then you have ones that, you know, have not been affected as much and have blossomed in their careers and become these huge mega superstars and are doing amazing.
Ryan Gosling or something. It's amazing. I don't know how they've managed to like get through, but for,
but you know what I will say, it is, it's your parents.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
I'm a firm believer, and it's the parents, it's the support system you had around you. You know, my parents were very keen on me going to a real school and having a real child, like a high school experience, like a middle school experience, going to the dances, having the exams, you know. And if you, you know, and I left high school early, but it was one of those things where if you, you know, get your education and you can go to a backup school, like if you have that, you have that, great, you know. And so that was always very, and it was not them pushing me to do it, if that makes sense. My mom was like, I don't understand what's going on. These moms are all crazy, like, you know, but it's what she wants to do and what am I supposed to do, you know, kind of a situation. But I think that you're right. It's you have to believe in yourself. You have to continue being like, still to this day, I mean, postpartum, I've not believed in myself at all as an actress. And I think that it has, whether or not this is true, this is my belief, I think that it has stopped me from working. It has stopped me from getting certain jobs because I'm like, oh, I'm not who I used to be anymore. I'm not, you know, the same body that he's, and I, that negativity, you know, people don't want to hear it, but it stays in your head and it will be, it's real. Like you can't be negative,
but
like,
I think the way around that is to embrace that change because it happens with aging as well. Like I'm not the person I was at 27 or even 35.
No.
And I have to go through that process in my head of like, oh, I am different. I appear different to the world. The world receives me differently.
Sure.
And I consider things in a different way. So if you're falling into the trap of thinking like, oh, I'm this girl that I was when I played this part on that show, like you're not, you know, and you have had a child and I think it's great. Like now you have an extra arrow in your quiver, you know, now it's like, well, I have this life experience and it adds a different depth and a different way of approaching any part, you know? And so it's a strength, it's a strength, but I absolutely understand the change.
Well, I will take that. But yeah, you know, the change of who we are, and especially I think for kid actors, you know, the ones that worked a lot when they were really young and then they're adults and people still want to see them as the, you know, young kids and still want to talk to them about the past things. You know, was there ever a point, I'll never forget this. This is kind of like a weird side jump, but we're going to get into this. But I will never forget the moment that you got Walking Dead. Because I remember you told me, and we were at a dinner with our mutual friend, and I said to you, like, your life is forever going to change, because I had just, I don't think I had just finished Capricorn, but it was, like, over, and I had done, like, the conventions and that whole world, but I was trying to explain to you, like, you're going to be going to these conventions, and people are going to know more about your character and know more about your backstory and about who you are as a person and ever. And it's going to be mind-blowing. You're going to have dolls that are being made of you and all this stuff. When you booked the role of Jesus on The Walking Dead, did you have any concept, even after I told you, that your life was completely going to change?
Not fully, I don't think. I didn't watch the show. I was aware of it. But it's like, so, you know, from the sci-fi world, like once you plug into that artery, then you're like, oh shit, you're in that world and you see what it is. But if you're not there yet, then you don't see it. Like most people don't go to conventions or, and are not in fandoms. If you're not in that world, it goes under the radar and you don't see it. But then once you're in it, it's amazing. And it's been a huge benefit to my life. And I've loved it, but I didn't watch the show. The casting happened really quickly. I was cast on a Friday. I was shooting on a Wednesday. I had to go from London to Atlanta via Stockholm to see Jen on the way. And then I was shooting, and then I shot 3 episodes back to back, and then it was done. And then I only really realized how crazy it was when Jen and I went to the season 6 premiere, and it was at Madison Square Garden, and the whole place is going nuts, and Norman Reedus rides in on a motorcycle. And I got kind of the fear. I really did. Yeah, I remember vividly, like, oh shit, I can't get out of this. Like I'm in this now. And it was just the fear of like, I don't know what it is and I don't know how it's going to affect my life and I'm going to lose my anonymity. And it's one of those things of like, oh, you can think that you want something and you're like, oh, I want that. And I want to be world famous and I want to, but it's really a double-edged sword and it brings with it amazing things, but the other side of it is you can't walk down the street, you can't buy groceries, you can't. And I was fortunate in that part that I had kind of a disguise. I had the long hair and the beard. When I had that, it was, I could recognized and anywhere in the world, but when I shaved it off, not so much. And I still get recognized a bit now from Jesus, which is really fun when it happens. And I know it's a super fan when it happens, because I'm like, wow, you recognize me now, that's crazy.
Like when we were at the zoo with our kids, and someone recognized, and you're like, but that was the funniest, because they were like, oh my God, can we get a picture? And you were like, but where do you know me from? Because you were just so curious.
Yeah.
And they were like Walking Dead. You're like, oh my God. Yeah. Like it was, because it's so true. You were such and not to like make it about my moment, but I understand, because I had the jet black hair and the bangs.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
When you are something different, it's, you're like in that look and people can I recognize you as only that. And when you're not, you're like, oh, wow, you know me from that? That's so cool.
Yeah,
like,
that's so fun.
like so unique and niche. And what happened when you went back for the second season, or your second season, knowing how big it was?
Well, so then it became really apparent, because I think I had to choose this on my first three episodes. Oh, I did, because there was lots of like secrecy, and they were holding up umbrellas and trying to keep my casting a secret. It slipped out.
Oh, because you were a character, because you were the character, you were an actual comic book character.
Yeah,
so
a very, very popular.
A lot of people weren't, right? Yeah.
Yeah, very popular right. from the comic books. And it was coming up to that time in the comic books. The show was catching up with it. And wow. So people knew that they were going to cast Jesus. So they were hiding me with umbrellas, and we all had code names and all this kind of stuff. And I fucked it up because, well, it wasn't actually me. Steven Yeun followed me on Instagram. And then, and people are so rabid that they're like, oh, who followed who on Instagram all the time? And then I started to get messages on Twitter, like, how's Atlanta? Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, we managed to keep it.
Oh my God.
No, it was wild. Because there at that point, there was this whole group on Facebook who, the whole thing, it was called The Spoiling Dead, I think. And the whole thing was finding everything out and finding out who was where and trying to, you know, get ahead of everyone. And so that was really the height of the show when I joined. And we all had, yeah, code names and everything. It was pretty wild. So I knew at that point, I was like, oh, this is a big deal. But it was only when I was confronted with all of the fans. Because you shoot south of Atlanta, you don't really see anyone. But then when the show is out and you're out in the public is when you really, really see it. And so then when I went back to shoot season 7, I was fully aware of what a big deal it was and what we were doing. But it was,
I mean,
really cool.
Didn't you do a cruise ship that was a Walking Dead cruise
ship? Yeah, I did three of them. We did three of them.
What the hell are those like?
Really fun.
I can't even imagine.
They were really, really fun. But Jen came with me on the first one. And, you know, on these cruise ships, there's like 10 different restaurants, blah, blah, blah. And all of us who were like guests of the cruise would stay on this collection of apartments at the top of the ship, which was like special access. You couldn't get in there.
The fancy ones.
Yeah, the fancy ones. And the first night, Jen was like, oh, let's go to one of the restaurants. And we went downstairs. And of course, everyone on that ship knows who you are. And you're trapped on the ship.
Right.
So we, you know, we walked like, I don't know, a few hundred feet. And then, you know, some, like a grandma sitting at a bar, wasted, turned around, was like, ah, it's Jesus. And then everyone goes crazy. And we're like, okay, we need to go back out. We need to go back out. But it, honestly, they were really fun, because, and they were advertised as like, go on a vacation with Walking Dead. And it really did feel like that. It was a fun, they were all really fun trips. Apart from, I think it was the second one. We went to Mexico, Cozumel, and the sea was really rough. And there was a lot of vomit. And people had to wait in really long lines. Like Norman was on that one and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. And people waiting in really long lines for their autographs. And there was like vomit along the lines.
No.
Yeah. Because, you know, people are drinking, but also it was very rocky and yeah.
I was about to say, what is the craziest thing that a fan has said to you at one of the conventions?
I don't know. I get
or done.
Yeah, I get asked that, and I don't tend to remember things, but the craziest thing will always be people having your face tattooed on them. That's like the wildest thing to me is like, wow, you have a picture of my face tattooed on you. That is wild. Yeah. But it's the character.
Did you ever have someone's your autograph like tattooed?
Yes, and I
because don't you feel the pressure of like, what if I fuck up? Like someone did that one time and I was like, oh my God, I don't really like what I did, but okay. And then they got it tattooed and I was like, it's not even like really
exactly
best.
The same. Like I signed it and they're like, great, I'm gonna go get this tattooed now. I was like, what? No, don't do that. And I could write it better. But they're like, oh, but it's the fun of it. Like, it's a little bit fun. Like, I have a, one of the things that I have, like, memorabilia is I did a play in London and Tom Hanks came to see it. It was about World War One.
Wow.
And Tom Hanks wrote us each personalized note cards. This is, like, 2005. And my agent, like, photocopied it and used it to sell me a lot in those early years. But I have it framed in the house. It's a really lovely note card and all of them were different. And it was a really lovely note. But halfway through, he messed up a word and he crossed it out. And I love that part. I'm like, oh, he was like, that's the humanity of him. Is like, oh, and he crossed it out. And so those little mistakes are people like that, you know,
that makes it really
special.
It
makes it personal and fun.
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, it sounds kind of like a horror film being stuck on a cruise ship with things could go really wrong really fast. And I feel like that would be like a really good horror film. So maybe we'll think about making that one. And speaking of horror films, you have Imaginary that is coming out next week. And I am so excited because I've been to the experience. I'm going to the premiere. I'm like the super fan of anything Blumhouse Productions. And of course, Tom Payne. So what was that experience like working with a crazy bear? Yeah,
you're the perfect person to take. Well, first of all,
I know.
When we were talking about you acting as a child, I was like, oh, that's so interesting because you can have great conversations with Piper, who plays the young girl in the movie who's 10. That's like you have such an insight into what's going on in her head and everything now, which is really – because I have no idea what it's like to be a like young child actor. I did like bits and pieces, but not like – auditioning a lot and all that kind of stuff. So that's really fun for me to see you talking to her.
On a side note about Piper is what I think what I really loved about her and what I was like drawn to is I've met a lot of young kids, right? Who you've worked with on sets and stuff. Mm. And a lot of them don't want to be there. Like they do not want to be there. And you're just like, this is so painful for so many reasons because you feel bad for them. Like you're like, what's going on at home? Like, do you really need money? Like that your parents are forcing this. Like, but what was really cool about Piper is when I met her, I was like, wow, you are just a precocious, bubbly, like you are like an old lady. And I told her, I was like, do you know who Swoozie Kurtz is? Because that's who you remind me of, who's my dear neighbor and a dear friend of mine. And I was like, you just have this, you know, and not like an older lady, like this personality of a seasoned actress, mm-hmm. like someone who's seasoned, who's seen it all, been on set, nothing's going to faze them. She's like, oh, I'm at the premiere. Let me tell you about this, you know, experience. And it doesn't feel, fake with her. No. And I think it's really cool and really nice to see that and refreshing. And it's no surprise. Lady loves being, you know, the center of attention, and she's a true Gemini like her mom. And it made me be like, oh wow. Like if that were to be my daughter's path, like I hope that I raise her in a way that she would want to be there if she was younger mm-hmm. as an actress, the same way that Piper is. And I think that it's really nice to see and really cool to see. So that's just my two cents on Piper.
I think if you follow your kid and where they want to go, then it'll be fine. But at the moment that you're pushing them into anything, it's just not a good look. It's not good.
I mean, honestly, like that's how I feel about the stupidity of like these preschools. Like talking preschools is like, it drives me crazy, but it also is like my favorite thing to talk about because I love hearing like everyone's reasons why they choose certain places. But what I have to say is you have to follow your child starting at such a young age, even in a preschool, in the sense of, I know the things that Lady's interested in. She is not someone that enjoys a free play open scenario of like throwing her, you know, outside and the outdoors. She's someone that craves structure and she thrives on structure. And when you give her a puzzle or you give her something to do and she accomplishes it, she herself, I see this like spark of energy in, opposed to when she's just going up and down a slide. Some kids thrive the outdoors. They use their imaginations. Like there's so much there. So I think that it starts at even the youngest age of 2 years old, you can kind of see like, okay, this is more the path that they want to be on. Let me guide them in this way and see what mm-hmm. happens and see if they like that, you know? And so it's important for you to listen to your kid, and especially in the business, listen to your children. They'll tell you what they want. But what was that experience? Was that your first horror film that you ever did?
No, I did a horror film in Bulgaria a long time ago. That was one of the things that propelled me to come to America, because that year I did this like straight to deep. No, but it. That project didn't, but doing that project did, because I did
doing that.
Yeah, because I did a guest spot on a TV show, and that horror film
Casualty.
No. It was another show. Actually, it was a show that you would love. It's called Beautiful People, and it's by this guy called Jonathan Harvey, who's done a lot of. He's gay, and he does a lot of like flamboyant TV shows. And it was about two young gay kids, but in their school and everything they do. And my episode had a lot to do with Eurovision. It was really, really fun.
Amazing.
It's a fun television show that I think you would really enjoy. But so I did that, which was great, but it was like a week's work. And then I did this horror film in Bulgaria, and I was just like, I gotta get out of here, and I gotta go to America and really try and go for it and see what happens, because I can't do this again. And I did it. I needed the money. So I was like, okay, of course I'm going to go do this job, but sure, it's not something that I'm proud of. And like, it's fine, but it's like, no, I want to think better of myself and try and do better things, at least give it a go. So then that.
So needless to say, imaginary is definitely the step.
Imaginary is my first American studio film. I've worked with Focus Features here, which is like a division of Universal, but that was my first one that got me out here. But that didn't have any kind of like big publicity push. That was Miss Petragulis for a Day. And that's actually, I used that to get over here and get my representation. But I had done that, and I've done other films. I did a film with Universal Germany, and like, but I've never done, okay, this is a movie being released by a studio in America, and you're going to do a day of press, and you're going to do all this stuff. So Lionsgate are releasing it here. Tomorrow we're doing the premiere and a whole day of press and all that kind of stuff. It's very fun and exciting. And it's just fun to have a studio with such a name like Blumhouse for horror films that's really behind it and pushing it. And I took the job pretty much 50% for the opportunity to work with them. Because I think I admire the business that they have. I like the approach that they take. Everyone really cares about the product and wants to make the best thing that they can. So we went down to New Orleans to shoot that. And I was kind of in and out over a period of a month.
Which is so spooky on itself. Yeah. Like, just on a side note, like New Orleans itself, the energy of that town is like, it's one of my favorite places in the world, but it is eerie as shit.
Yeah, and it's humid. We shot in the summer in June, and it was so sticky and humid. Luckily, I didn't shoot outside that much, and then we moved into studio, but like, it's very, very hot and sweaty down there. And so that was a really, really fun experience. It's the first time I played a dad. I never played a dad in anything before. Oh. And in this one, I have a teenager and Piper, who's playing like 8. So that, and both of
them. A teenager?
No, Piper, because there's two. I have two daughters in the movie.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. That was just Piper.
No. There's another.
Piper's a little young for a teenager.
No, she's young. So she's young and she's playing, I guess, like 7, 8 in the movie. And like, okay. I have a teenager in the movie as well, who's very teenage. They're both wonderful. Yeah. So Tegan Burns is the teenage daughter. And then Piper Braun plays the younger sibling, and that's great. And then I've remarried from their mother to the lead in the movie, is DeWanda Wise, and we move into her childhood home in New Orleans. And then my youngest daughter becomes friendly with an imaginary friend who takes the form of a teddy bear. And then the movie starts.
Let me tell you, if it's anything like the experience and the horror walkthrough that we did last week, I fell to the floor and someone had, one of my friends was like, oh, come on, you didn't really fall to the floor. I'm like, no, I literally fell to the floor because there was a moment where whatever this creature is, and I can't wait to discover who it is. It was so scary with these long fingers and these nails. And I was like, oh my God, what is this thing? Like, it was so creepy. So it's going to be so much fun. I'm so excited. And I'm so grateful to be going to the, premiere so thank you so much for that. And then when can we expect Horizon to come out?
So Horizon is coming out in two parts, one part in June and one part in August, and they just released the trailer for that a couple of days ago. And it's a return to the epic Western. It's the beginnings of America. Kevin Costner has been working on it pretty much since the 80s.
What was it like working with Kevin Costner?
Pretty emotional for me.
I imagine.
I we're shot out in the middle of Utah on these great, amazing vistas and these mesas, huge rocks. And it was emotional because it was what I dreamed making a movie was when I was a kid. You know, I'm like, I just want to be on a movie set and I just want to do. And it was everything that I could have imagined a movie set would be, basically. And we had all these wagons and the horses and everyone's dressed in the, you know, American West clothing. And it was, and I mean, I'm just a guy from England, you know, I'm actually playing British in that movie.
Which is amazing.
Well, I'm playing British in that movie and imaginary. And I haven't played British in like 10 years. Walking Dead was American.
This is so fun.
It's amazing. And so much so that like, I shot Horizon before I shot Imaginary. And I was like, do I sound weird? Because I'm not used to being on set and doing a British accent. So I think I was kind of putting on a British accent.
A British accent.
Putting on a character. And I was like, I had to remind myself, like, what are you doing? Like, just use your accent. Wow. Everyone else is American.
Yeah.
So you're going to really stand out if you push it too far. And like, okay, I don't need to. Sure, I just need to do my British accent. Just talk
you
like me.
You just need to be you.
But, yeah. But it was very weird to be British.
What an experience.
No, it was
yeah,
very cool.
No, I can't imagine. And I think that you're right. It's, I can't imagine, and I hope soon to do a movie like that where it's one of those moments where you're like, wow, this is what it's all about.
Yeah.
And I feel like what you're so lucky about as well is not only was it during COVID, right? That you guys shot it during COVID?
It was kind of towards the end. We shot it. Where are we now?
But I mean, it was after, it was post 2020 is when
Yeah.
So I think that what's so cool about that is those kind of movie experiences – like have not happened for a long time and aren't really going to go back because that's a movie experience. That is a movie star experience.
Well, I was also very aware while we were shooting it that this might not happen again or it's not going to happen as much.
Yeah.
You know, like Dune,
right.
The Dune movies, I think, are still very much in that vein, which is great, but there's still a lot of effects in those movies. But I was just listening to a podcast.
Sure, this is a classic Western.
This is, I mean, I've said a lot, like, we could have shot this movie in the 50s, and the only difference would be the size of the cameras. Like, everything was as it was. Like, you know, everything is actually there, and, yeah, you're in the movie, basically. And that's what I mean when I, you know, where I'm like, oh, I want to be in the movies. You felt like you were in the movie. And that I had to kind of go through that as well. And Kevin came over, like, when we first started, and we had my first day, and he was like, okay, guys, just... you're real people. And I was like, yeah, I know. I just, it's really hard not to be like, I'm in a Western and like, I'm this character. Yeah. You know, and you just have to be like,
I have a horse.
Yeah. It's like, this is my wagon. We're characters. And like, no, you're real people on the trail. And like, you always have that first day thing where you talk a bit too loudly. And you're like, but no, it was really, really cool to be in that. Like, I was just listening to a podcast this morning where they were talking about the Mandalorian show is coming to LA. And people are like, oh, they're going to go up to the Redwoods and they're going to go here and they're going to go that. And I'm pretty sure they're just going to shoot it all in studio.
Green screen.
And the green screen. And then that, whatever they call it, the big moving video wall, whatever. And I get why they do that. And that's better than green screen. But you're not there. You're not breathing the air that's there. You're not seeing the vistas in the same way. And it definitely takes away from it, you know. So I was very aware when we were shooting it, they're like, wow, I don't know if I'll get the chance to do this again. So it was very cool
taking that moment. Oh, I love that. Well, Tom, I'm gonna ask you my final question that I ask everyone on the show. What is your emotional support?
Wow, I didn't know you were gonna ask that. That's so funny. I haven't listened to it. I guess what is my emotional support? I guess my wife. I guess Jennifer and my son, like, it really opens up your life in a different way when you meet someone that you know you're gonna have children with, and that and so in doing that and really connecting with that, you're gonna open up a whole new life and a whole new inner life and a whole new outer life, and then when you start to have children, that opens up more, and you just your whole world changes, and it's definitely I'm a very emotional person, and I didn't really have an outlet for that before because we don't have emotional conversations in my family, and that led to me being quite wayward when I was younger and drinking a lot and just being very emotionally unstable, and nowadays I find myself very grounded and able to give and accept love, and I'm really really happy about that. And I think it's made my life infinitely better and will continue to do so.
Well, I cannot wait for baby number two. And it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
I can't wait for Imaginary. I can't wait for Horizon. I'm going to have all the links to connect with you on social media in the show notes below. Thank you so much for coming on Emotional Support. Thank you so much for taking care of Lady so well and being there for us and for having your family being so close to our family. It's so fun to do this with people that you knew from a past life, you know, of your single, not single life because we were both in relationships, but like in a younger version of us and then doing it together now, I think it's really special. So I love you so much, Tom, and thank you.
Thank you.